Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
At Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Practicing basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success, so you know something I can really do this.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Unconquered Podcast here on Seminole Sports Radio through vSporto. I'm your host, Jason Staples, and it is time for what we have all been waiting for since the end of the last college football season. Florida State faces Alabama in what is being dubbed, and I think rightly so, the greatest opener of all time. Lots to talk about in breaking down this matchup. It's obviously harder, always harder, anytime you're breaking down an opener because there's so many moving parts between seasons. Teams are not the same as what you saw at the end of the last season. And obviously Alabama has an entirely new offensive coordinator. They're running a little bit of a different system, trying to get a little bit more back to being able to throw downfield and threaten teams with more balance than what they had under Lane Kiffin last year. Should make them more difficult to defend because they're going to still mix some of that some of what Jalen Hurts can do with his legs in with everything else. But they've been really trying to work on some of that other stuff. But either way, this is going to be this podcast. We're going to break down what we can know about this game and what we think we know. And then I'm going to give my prediction for what I think happens in this game. Those of you who were with this podcast last year will remember that we had a pretty good run down toward the end of the year where I think I predicted the Florida game, the score correctly. I think I got the if I remember right, I got the spread right and was a point or so off the score on the Clemson game. Basically was only off by a few points overall in the last like five or six games of last year. So we'll see if we can keep that up in this opener. Always harder, like I said, to predict an opener, but let's go ahead and get to it. Actually, before we get to that, I do want to thank the sponsor of the show. That is Louis Marquez, realtor Louis Marquez in Jacksonville, Florida. And Louis, again, is not just a realtor. He is a trained photographer and videographer, which is especially important now that basically everybody finds their real estate online first, home buyer search online first. So you better have your house looking as good as possible, and nobody's going to make it look better than Louis. He can showcase your home, get it sold quickly for the best possible price. And of course, if you're in the market for a house in Jacksonville or the greater Jacksonville area, give Louis a call. Let him know that you heard about him on this program, and definitely give us a boost, and also help your fellow Seminoles. Louis, be happy to help any Seminole get into a better housing situation or sell your house. And of course, if you're listing your house, go ahead and mention to him that you heard about him through this podcast, and he'll include a free home warranty that'll cover repairs or replacements of any essential home systems during the listing period. Like I said, give Louis a call at 850-443-5797 or check in with him. There are various ways of getting a hold of him. You can just give him a search. Louis Marquez, realtor in Jacksonville, Florida. Thanks again for his sponsorship on this show, which is going to allow us to do a little bit more. And I'm also excited to say we're going to have a few other options here, a few other things on this podcast shortly that we'll be able to announce. One other thing, we also have, I set up a pick 'em pool against the spread this year for listeners of the Unconquered podcast. So you can go ahead and find that over at funofficepools.com. Search Unconquered Podcast, and you'll find the group where we'll be picking basically the best games of the week, most competitive games, most interesting games of the week, and of course Florida State games and ACC games, SEC games, and so on over the course of the year. The winner will get a prize to be announced later. There's some things in the works there, like I said, that I'm pretty excited about that will ultimately serve for prizes as well. So like I said, go ahead to funofficepools.com and join the pick'em there. If you can't find it, it's easy also to find it through our Facebook page, through the Unconquered Podcast Facebook page, and there's a link to it through there as well. All right, let's go ahead and get to breaking down this Alabama-Florida State game. Had plenty of time during the summer to watch some of Alabama from last year again, break down as much as I could, watch some of the Florida State All-22 that I have access to from 2016, which you know, is also good to be able to evaluate a little bit from. Also went back and watched the Florida State Alabama matchup in 2007 when Jimbo Fisher in his first year as coordinator and Nick Saban in his first year as the head coach at Alabama faced one another as well to get a good sense of how they decided to attack one another, because again, you can bet they're going back and taking a look at that stuff and going back over old notes and old memories and all this about how each guy prefers to do different things. They know each other inside and out, and that's one of the things that makes this matchup so fun. Is this is going to be a scheme junkie's dream to watch and to watch replays of. And once we get hold of the All-22 in particular, getting a chance to see some of the little wrinkles that I'm sure, the little tendency breakers that each is going to have in there waiting on the respective opponents, and seeing how they counter the counters and all of this while not losing their identity in the process. And that's something that both Fisher and Saban do a really, really good job of, is maintaining their identity while still leaving room for some tendency breaking wrinkles that can turn a game if you don't have the right counter just at the right time. So this is going to be an interesting one. Again, like I said, everybody knows that. Another thing is that neither Saban at Alabama nor Jimbo Fisher at Florida State have ever lost an opener. Saban is 10-0. In openers at Alabama, and of course his opener reputation only built last year with the demolition of a pretty good USC team, Southern Cal team, which at this point has people thinking that Saban is just, you know, untouchable with all that extra prep over the course of the summer and in openers and all that. But you know, one of the things that I keep going back to is that, you know, Alabama's actually been fairly vulnerable in some of those openers. They've played decent teams, but they have not played a team on the level of Florida State in those openers, even though USC, like I said, was a good team last year. They were a shadow of themselves before they got Sam D. Arnold, or Sam Darnold, as he prefers to be called, in the starting quarterback position. They just were not the same team until they got they figured out who they were a few weeks later. And I wonder how that game might have gone, you know, say 2 months into the season or at the end of the season compared to the beginning. I still think Alabama would have won comfortably, but certainly not that kind of demolition once USC discovered itself. And I go back to, you know, some of the others when they opened with West Virginia, and Clint Trickett and that group at West Virginia gave Alabama all they could handle. And that was not that West Virginia team was nowhere near Alabama in terms of the talent on the roster. Similar with the I want to say what 2012 or so 2013 I don't remember exactly when it was the Virginia Tech game, the last time they played Virginia Tech in an opener. Virginia Tech was with them that entire game, and then it was a couple special teams plays that broke it open. But Virginia Tech shut Alabama down pretty well and was moving the football on that Alabama defense. In fact, they were running away from them. They had a couple really big plays that put them ahead, but then Alabama eventually got a couple key special teams plays, and that was that. So this is not a situation where Saban's teams have just been thoroughly dominant in every opener, but they have managed to win every opener. The same can be said, like I said, for Jimbo Fisher. And under Fisher, like I said, Florida State is 7-0 in openers. But what really matters is that they're 3-0 and like I said, Saban is 10-0, and I think he's 5-0 against Power 5 opponents. Jimbo Fisher is 3-0 against Power 5 opponents in season openers. And that's Pitt. Actually, we'll start with Mississippi last year, Ole Miss last year, Pitt in 2013, and then Oklahoma State in 2014. And again, he's 3-0 in those games. Interesting thing, actually, that I think a lot of people wouldn't expect or wouldn't remember, wouldn't realize, is in those three openers, the combined three openers. Now, granted, two of them were with Jameis Winston, so that may throw some things off. But in those three games, Florida State averages 41 points, 530 yards, and less than one turnover, which is some serious offense early in the season when teams generally come in with the defense a little bit ahead of the offense. Florida State, when they've opened up with Power 5 opponents, has generally come out guns blazing on offense. It'll be interesting to see if he can manage to get that done against Alabama. Now, before we actually get into any specific matchup and analysis as well, I did have a couple questions I want to address before the weekend, because they do pertain to this matchup enough that I don't want to leave them to a later question and answer. One of them came in a little earlier this summer, and one came in this week again via social media. And you can always get in touch with me via social media through Twitter at Doc Staples or through the Noel Digest Facebook page. This is the best ways to get rolling, and definitely use those avenues and platforms to share this podcast with your friends. That definitely helps me out a lot. And anyway, the first question is: where would you rank the stable of backs for Florida State and Alabama out of high school? This is from DLove_20 on Twitter. It's a really good question. It's one that, to some degree, I'm not sure I'm comfortable with giving a full answer, because I'd have to go back and reevaluate all these guys. I don't have, you know, notes on all these guys going back 3 or 4 years that are that I can just easily get out and compare number by number, which I probably should do here moving forward. But just going off the cuff, more or less, the way I would rank these backs out of high school. The other problem is that ranking them just straight out of high school is a little different than ranking where I would put them right now, and also where I would necessarily rank their potential moving forward. So which one's the best back at this moment going into this game is a different answer than which one should be the best back in 2 years. And that might be a little bit different answer, although in this case, it's probably not. From who is the best back in terms of prospects coming out of high school. So, you know, those things can change as guys improve and, you know, get hurt or whatever else once they step on campus. In any case, coming straight out of high school, I would have put Cam Akers number one. Akers is, I think, maybe the most impressive, even though he was at quarterback, the most impressive running back film, running back highlights and such, huddle stuff that's accessible that I've ever seen. It's right up there with the best I've ever seen. You know, with guys like Adrian Peterson and Leonard Fournette and those guys. I mean, it's better film than Dalvin Cook had coming out by a good bit. So, you know, Akers would be my number one. My number two would be Najee Harris, who, even though Akers was that much ahead of basically everybody else that I would think of, at least in the last few years, Najee Harris is not far behind Akers in that regard. I think Najee Harris projects very well as a kind of Joe Mixon type running back with that kind of versatility and that kind of power while being that smooth and that versatile out of the backfield. And that's special. So those two, I think, are the top two talents on either roster. Behind them, coming out of high school, I'd probably put Bo Scarborough in there. Again, the size-speed combination there is unusual. Then I really liked Amir Rasul coming out of high school. I really did, and I'd probably put him fourth, which it may surprise a bunch of people out there, but those who listen to this podcast after Florida State signed him will remember I really liked Rasul because I tend to like guys who run 10-4 in the 100 meters, who actually show that they're tackle-breaking guys. You know, is this a guy that is actually a football player that can run through tackles, that shows the ability to be a really good zone running back and the ability to run with vision and power and have 10-4 speed? Well, I'll go ahead and take that guy. Now, his little bit lesser production in high school and some injuries he dealt with, you might bump him down the list. But in terms of just straight talent and where I'd rank him, I'd probably put him fourth. Then I put Damian Harris fifth. You know, again, a little bigger back and somebody that probably should be on the list there. But you could argue, really, Harris, Kalon LeBourne, and Zaquandre White. I put all in the same tier there. I mean, those guys would all be, and I actually probably put them all in the same tier with Amir Rasul. You really have Akers, Najee Harris, and Bo Scarborough, followed by a tier with Amir Rasul, Damian Harris, Kalon LeBourne, Zaquandre White, and Jacquez Patrick. That's really the next tier for me. And really, Jacquez Patrick, I don't think is all that much behind Bo Scarborough in that regard. And actually coming into this year, I think they're very similar backs, and I don't think there's a whole lot of separation between them. Scarborough has more experience and more hype at this point. I'm not sure how much better he really is than Jacquez Patrick. We'll find out, I guess. And then the final three, Brian Robinson, Ryan Green, and Josh Jacobs on that list. And, you know, again, that might change. That list might change just a little bit now, based on what we've seen since they've been on campus. I'd actually probably bump both Rasul and Damian Harris above Bo Scarborough now, and I would have Patrick above Kalon LeBourne and Zaquandre White now. But again, that's applying some things a little bit differently than I would as prospects coming out of high school. And again, Zaquandre White is a guy that I think may really blossom in the next year or two and may change that list entirely. So who knows? And again, you know, Kalon LeBourne could do that as well. So we'll see what ends up happening there. But that's how I'd rank those guys, at least thinking about it, you know, going back, trying to rank them how I'd rank them coming out of high school. All right. Second question is, what do you think about Jimbo adding some spread or some form of spread speed game to the playbook? Here's how this could be beneficial. Number one, younger and more talented players would be able to get on the field quicker because of the simplicity of the spread. Number two, Florida State could better leverage their speed and athleticism against their opponents. Number three, I feel like they would be unstoppable with multidimensional styled offenses, which could have the ability to switch between two different types of offenses at any time. What do you think? P.S. Someone should propose this idea to Coach Fisher. That is from Kenyatta. Well, there's a lot there, and I don't want to spend too much time on it. But basically, first of all, Fisher does have a hurry-up, you know, spread speed stuff in his offense. It's there. They have the ability to change tempos, so that's not an issue. Secondly, it's not true that the spread is necessarily simpler and you can get younger and more talented players on the field with it. That's just not true. It's false. You still have to be able to adjust your routes as wide receivers if you're going to throw downfield at all. You still have to be able to. And in fact, if you're going to do this and add more packages, that means more learning, and it means you're actually going to have less idea or less ability to get those players on the field. So it actually makes it more complex, not less, unless you're going to pull a bunch of other stuff out in order to become a primarily spread team, in which case it winds up being a lot of times more of a wash than people realize. I don't think that's true that they could better leverage their speed and athleticism against their opponents. I think being a balanced multiple attack allows a Goliath program the most benefit versus everybody else. Whereas if you are if you have some limitations in other respects, becoming more one-dimensional and emphasizing something that might be more difficult for a Goliath program to handle is the way to go. So the David philosophy is to go, you know, straight up-tempo spread or something like that. But the Goliath philosophy is to rely on a little bit more ability to be vanilla and multiple in that sense. That's how that goes. And again, you know, I've talked to Fisher some about, you know, about going up tempo and all that in the past, and he's not entirely opposed to doing it, and they've used it some, but again, his philosophy is that the main thing is to maintain the flexibility of your offense so that you can tailor to your personnel without having to plug personnel into a specific, you know, I'm Art Briles and this is the offense that I'm going to run regardless of who I have. If you're doing what Fisher does, you can tailor a little bit more to the talent on your roster, and you can run some of that stuff if you want, but you don't have to. You don't have to commit to doing some of that. So anyway, with that said, let's get to breaking down the Alabama Florida State game. Now, as we get into evaluating the actual matchup here, I want to preface this by saying, you know, it's important to remember that styles make fights, and it really isn't so much about which team is more talented top to bottom in terms of the roster and, you know, any number of other things along those lines, which, I mean, frankly, Alabama is the more talented team top to bottom. The better roster is Alabama. But the question is, the question is not which team has the better roster top to bottom. The question is which team matches up better with the other in terms of strengths and weaknesses of who's actually going to play in the context of what those teams do schematically. That's really the question. So you might have a better third string or fourth string on your team, but that doesn't really matter in a one-off matchup like this, particularly at the beginning of the year when both teams are largely healthy. That doesn't matter so much. What matters is which team matches up better with the guys that are actually going to play in the context of the schemes that you're going to actually see out there in play. So as I do this analysis, that's what I'm evaluating more than anything else. And one thing that's definitely going to help in that regard is the return of Matthew Thomas, who is going to be he rejoined the team as of today. I'm recording this early on Thursday morning. Matthew Thomas has returned to the team, has been cleared to play, and I expect him to play against Alabama. I wouldn't be surprised if he starts, quite frankly. And you know, this is because, again, all Matthew Thomas has been doing the last few weeks is watching Alabama film, getting the, you know, catching up with the Alabama game plan in a roundabout way. And, you know, obviously he can't be out in practice, but, you know, that doesn't mean he can't have access to everything. He's been watching Alabama film. He's been prepping and he's been working out hard. And he's a fifth year senior. It's not like he needs to learn the defense. Yes, it would have helped for him to have some reps the last week or so, but you know, he's definitely the best and most talented linebacker Florida State has. He's going to get the opportunity to go through walkthrough and to go through some of the stuff that's going to help him get mentally prepared to face what they're going to face. And to be honest, they're still having to adjust on the fly once they see what Daboll is going to bring out anyway. So I expect to see him out there, which is a big deal for Florida State. I mean, he is by far their most talented linebacker and one of the most experienced. So that definitely helps. And you know, this also helps because Florida State had been contingency planning for the possibility that they might be a linebacker short as far back as the spring. Listeners of this program should know that because one of the things that that I talked about in the spring was, well, you know, the linebackers are a little shaky, and you know, that's a concern going into camp, and we'll see what happens in terms of camp and. You know, they had contingency plans in place that they were working into various rep schemes and all that, and working on all the way back into the spring. And one of those was that Derwin James was going to end up playing in that role a good bit. If Matthew Thomas wasn't going to be there, or someone else wasn't able to be there, Derwin James would be able to play more in the linebacker position to compensate for perhaps not having somebody that they thought, you know, might not be there, whether for injury or for some other reason. The problem is, if you put Derwin there, that means you can't move him around as much as they like to, and you can't use him as a matchup eraser, which is basically what they're going to do a lot in this game. So that gives you a lot less flexibility. Matthew Thomas returning gives them a lot of flexibility and again, helps them stylistically coming into this game. And I think, generally speaking, you can expect Matthew Thomas to be pretty good in this game. Is he going to be a little rusty, maybe just a little bit, but I think by the second quarter or so, he should be in the flow of the game, and they'll be figuring out exactly what Alabama's doing on offense by that point anyway. Okay, so breaking this down a couple different ways. First of all, I want to talk about this matchup as what we at least think we can know going into this matchup. So what are the things that you know, I think we can comfortably say we know about this matchup. And I think there are a few things that are known quantities, partly just because of who these teams are, and then partly because of who they're returning and based on how the teams played last year. I think the first thing that we know is neither team is going to have a lot of success running between the tackles. It's just not going to happen. They're both powerful run teams. Got some great running backs. You got, you know, Bo Scarborough and Jaquez Patrick, you know, big backs that you would expect to do well between the tackles. But listen, Derek Nnadi and Deron Payne are ultimately going to be the beasts in the middle that are going to force people to run around them. Those guys are going to make it tough sledding. And Florida State in particular has so much depth at defensive tackle that they're going to throw at Alabama in this game that ultimately, that's going to make it difficult for Alabama to run between the tackles, and Florida State's going to have trouble running against Alabama's front between the tackles. You know, it's Alabama's front. That's how it works. You don't generally just run down Alabama's throat. So what that's going to mean is that's going to put a premium on the ability of both teams to run on the perimeter. That means, you know, Jalen Hurts getting on the edge. That means, you know, Scarborough on some of the stuff that they ran against Clemson, which happens to be the stuff that Florida State ran against Clemson as well, means Florida State's counter power game. Again, going back to what they ran with Dalvin Cook last year, trying to get the edge there with some wing sets and things like that, double tights or a tight end and a wing, doing some of the stuff that they did, you know, using the tight end to pull and lead not into the B gap, but rather into the C or D or around to the C or D gap to seal an end. That's the sort of thing I think we're going to see more in this game from both teams. And the team that better runs on the edge is going to have an edge in this game. I also think we're going to see, you know, some emphasis on trying to get some cutback runs in the zone game, but both defenses should be pretty disciplined against that. But the quarterbacks running in this game, that X factor will be a factor as a result of the difficulties running between the tackles, which both teams are going to want to do, but I think they're going to have a really hard time doing. Secondly, I think we can know, I think we have a pretty good idea that Florida State's not going to have success or much of it if they're playing behind the sticks. If Florida State's in third and long situations, they need to just, for the most part, they either need to throw it up to one of the big receivers and give themselves a one-on-one chance and, you know, get the ball out quickly and do that, or they need to run the football. Avoid turnovers, and, you know, the pass protection situation against that defensive front is going to be a problem. Alabama's defensive edge rushers and so on, yeah, they lost their guys from last year, but if you watch their spring game, that young talent on the edge is really, really good, and it's long, and those guys are going to cause problems. So if you're going to be behind the sticks, let's just hope you repped your punting game a lot. Florida State's not going to have a whole lot of success from behind the sticks. Another thing I think we know at this point, Alabama's not going to wear Florida State's defensive front down the way that they have basically everybody else they've played over the years, over the last five to 7 years. They're not going to wear Florida State's defensive front down. Florida State has the best and deepest defensive front, particularly with the depth with those 300-pound defensive tackles, where they can go 6-7 deep easily. They've got the best group there that Bama has faced in years. Bama didn't face anybody like that last year or the year before. So what this means is that Alabama's not going to be able to rely on the so-called Alabama crockpot or slow cooker effect. And they couldn't do that against Clemson the last couple of years either because of who Clemson has up front or had up front. They weren't able to just stick them in the crockpot and, you know, slow cook those guys into the point where they could wear them down and eventually gas them and run down their throats late in the game. That's not going to happen in this game. Again, when you can rotate 7-8 competent 300 pounders on that defensive line, it's a lot easier not to get worn down. And if anything, I think that's going to go the other way. The other thing that we know, and I've talked about this a bunch this year, this summer, nobody beats Alabama without at least one wide receiver, usually a bigger guy, who consistently wins vertically against their corners. You have to beat them deep. You have to beat them on the edge. You have to be able to beat them on those one-on-one matchups where your guy takes a 50-50 and makes it an 80-20. The Mike Williams, the Mike Evans, you know, the Laquan Treadwells and Stringfellow from Ole Miss, going all the way back to Alshon Jeffrey in 2011 with South Carolina. And, you know, people want to talk about this being, you know, Alabama, you know, oh, well, styles make fights. And, you know, the only teams that beat Alabama are teams that are spread teams. When was the last time a pro style team beat Alabama? It's not about that. What it's about is, do you have the quarterback and the big wide receivers to beat them on the edge? If you don't, you're not going to beat them. Pro style, spread, doesn't matter. What matters is, can you beat them on the outside? Which is why the last 2 years, if Alabama and Florida State had played, I would have picked Alabama by a comfortable margin. By a comfortable margin. Probably two scores or more. Because Florida State just didn't have those guys on the outside. When you're trotting out Kermit Whitfield, you know, Travis Rudolph, who's having a really good NFL preseason, Travis Rudolph and Bobo Wilson as your three starters, you're not beating Alabama. Those guys don't scare those guys, especially when Alabama's putting Humphrey out there as well, in addition to Averett. It's not happening. So those are things I think we know about this game. Now, as for some things that we don't know and what I think are the keys to the game, where the game is actually going to be won, there's a few things in that category as well. I think the number one factor here, and I think where the game is going to be decided as much as anywhere else, is can Florida State's wide receivers beat Alabama's defensive backs vertically? If Auden Tate, Keith Gavin, and Nooney Murray eat in this game, Florida State will win, and win comfortably, potentially. If those guys can beat Alabama's defensive backs vertically, Florida State's going to win the game. More likely than not. That's what killed Michigan in the Orange Bowl. Michigan had a really, really good defense. And you know, yeah, you can point to Dalvin Cook, and Dalvin Cook was a big part of things, and he's the one who kept Florida State competitive in the game in a lot of respects, because Florida State was able to run the football, especially in key situations, and that long one in particular. But really, it was the ability that Florida State had to hit big plays over the top. They only completed 9 passes, but boy, they were 9 big ones. Their ability to win those one-on-one matchups against Michigan's secondary when Michigan was playing one-on-one is what really made the difference in the game. Nooney Murray's 2 touchdowns, you take those away, and Florida State it may not even be competitive. Even though Florida State dominated that game statistically, it was really because not only did they have Dalvin Cook, they were able to dominate the matchup out wide. So that's number one. Will Florida State be able to do that? And I will say, Florida State has repped one-on-one vertical routes with Gavin and Tate and also Nooney and some of those guys a ton since the start of camp in anticipation of this game. They've done, you know, you hear about Fisher talking situations and everything, and that's one of the things they've done a bunch in situations. Tate just going one-on-one with some pretty good corners, pretty good defensive backs. These guys going one-on-one in situations against McFadden and against Derwin James and so on. And they've been winning their share of battles against those guys. And if they're able to win their share of battles, or more than their share of battles against Alabama, Florida State wins this game. The other thing that benefits here is those throws, ability to win those 50-50 balls, those, you know, back shoulder fades and vertical throws, those sorts of things. Those throws get out of a quarterback's hand more quickly. So if you're in a long yardage situation, or if you're in a situation where you have to deal with the rush at all, you actually get that out more quickly than when you're going intermediate stuff. So that's the other advantage there. You're potentially able to take advantage of a matchup while also not exposing your quarterback to as much danger. So that's the other benefit there. Okay, another major factor, and this is the flip side of that. Can Jalen Hurts threaten Florida State's secondary in the intermediate and deep zones? And Jalen Hurts, quite frankly, was not very good in this area last year, and particularly when he was under pressure. He struggled. And he struggled to throw from the pocket when things were tight, when things were compressed. You get him on the move and look out. But if he's in the pocket and it gets a little bit compressed, and that's something that actually Francois did pretty well. When things got tight in the pocket last year, he was pretty good. Hurts, not so much. And, you know, will he be able to hurt Florida State in the intermediate and deep zones from the pocket? Will Alabama be able to threaten Florida State with that play-action passing game that they want to use? Because I'm going to tell you right now, Florida State will try to pressure him while keeping him in the pocket. They're less interested in sacking him. Now, they're still going to go after him, but they're less interested in sacking him than making sure that they compress, they make things tight, and they put pressure on him while keeping him contained. They're more afraid of his legs than his arm. I can tell you that right now. And one of the things I expect to see from Florida State is a lot, and particularly in the first half before Marshall's back, I expect to see a lot of the 3-4 in the first half. Even when Bama goes a little bit more of a spread look, I think Florida State's going to respond in some cases with more of a 3-4 look, where they're going to have Naughty, Christmas, and Sweat as your down three. And sometimes they'll have, you know, Sweat, they'll pull Sweat out of there, or put Sweat at one of the, you know, maybe the buck or something like that. But they'll put another big guy in there. Maybe Wilkerson, maybe you're going to have Darvin Taylor, who is very good in that role in camp. Some of those guys are going to rotate in and out, but you're going to have 3 down big ones, big guys, one of whom is often going to be Josh Sweat. And then you're going to have Burns and Pugh as your outside backers in that 3-4. One of them may be down, one of them may be up, both of them may be up. But by doing that, you're getting some length and some athleticism and size on the edge to stop the run, while also while also getting those guys in position where if you rush them, you can hopefully keep Jalen Hurts more contained. I think in the second half, you might see Marshall or Derwin James up there in that star role where Pugh is at times, and Pugh will rotate in for Burns some, and you'll get some of that. But I think you're going to see a good bit of that 3-4 look, particularly on neutral downs, to try to maintain, to guard that edge. Florida State had some trouble defending the edge running game last year. They were not especially good stopping them. They're really good between the tackles, especially once Nnadi got healthy. But they were not as good stopping the run outside the tackles. With Derwin James back, that'll change. With going with some of the 3-4 stuff with Burns up and with Pugh up, that also will, I think, help again in terms of setting that edge and defending the edge. So it's going to be interesting to see how they handle that. But I expect to see a good bit of that in the first half, in particular, as a way to try to compress what Hurts is doing in the pocket while getting some length around him. And also being a little bit unpredictable on where the pressure is going to come from. Is it going to be, Jacob Pugh rushing outside Josh Sweat, who ends up rushing from a quasi-defensive tackle spot? Or is it going to be Burns on the opposite side of Sweat, each of them rushing more as outside rushers? I mean, you're going to see both of those from the same set. You're going to see some different looks from the defensive line in this game to try it again to create some hesitance from Hurts. Again, going back to what LSU did, using Arden Key and some of the others that they have, doing what they did to hold Alabama to 10 last year. But really using some of those looks to keep Alabama off the edge as much as possible. Now, the third factor, and this is, I think, going to be really interesting, and I think some of the listeners may be surprised to even hear this being asked. But can Florida State's offensive line and their offense wear down Alabama's defensive line? Say that again. Can Florida State wear down Alabama's defense, particularly Alabama's defensive line? We saw Alabama's defense wear down last year against Clemson. And again, part of that was because Alabama lost a ton of talent on that defense, particularly on the defensive line between 2015 and 2016. So as good as people were talking about the 2016 defense being generationally good, one of the greatest of all time, the 2015 Alabama defense was better than the 2016 Alabama defense because the 2016 Alabama defense was a bunch of backups on the 2015 Alabama defense. They were still on the team, but they had a bunch of NFL guys in front of them and they rotated all those guys. Then you got the 2015 guys out and the 2016 guys were in there, but they didn't have the same quality of depth in 2016 that they had in 2015. And now they just lost five of their seven front seven to the NFL from 2016. So 2 years in a row, they've lost a bunch of guys early. And it's not just losing guys. It's losing guys early that hurts you because you don't have time to develop the guys behind them. But they've lost guys early 2 years in a row now. And now the result of that is they are just simply not as deep. And particularly with experienced talent as they were in 2016 when they were not as deep as they were in 2015 up front. And that's especially true if Raekwon Davis, who was shot in the leg on Sunday, if he's out or if he's limited in this game, that further hurts Alabama's depth up front. They're certainly not as deep up front as, say, Florida State is. Which, when was the last time that Alabama was not as good or deep up front as the team that they faced? Last year, you can make a case that Clemson's starting defensive line was better than Alabama's, but Alabama was the deeper defensive line. Not by a mile, but it was close. But this has got to be the first time in, I don't know, maybe since 2011? Somewhere in there, that Alabama was not the deeper and better defensive line in the game that they're playing. And, particularly, like I said, if Raekwon Davis doesn't play or is limited, and again, they have tons of talent. It's just young. And it's not Alabama talent yet, right? It's super talented guys, but it's not Alabama players yet. These are guys that haven't played, that aren't as reliable, that are not the grown men that they've been putting on the field the last couple years up front. And so it's a thinner group and less experienced than it's been. If this game, goes deep into the fourth quarter where it's a competitive game and Florida State's able to run the football, some and is able to really stay balanced, can Florida State do what they did last year to Clemson, to Florida, to Michigan, and wear down a very good defensive line with their offensive line? And that's something, again, people, yes, Florida State's offensive line, there's some question marks about pass protection, particularly if they're facing, a long yarded situation against this Alabama front. You don't want to do that. But when it comes to run blocking, and when it came to run blocking last year, Florida State handled its business against some really good fronts, particularly late in the year. They handled their business against Clemson and against Florida and against Michigan. That was not just Dalvin Cook's ability of, getting off for 100 plus yards on those defenses despite having no holes. Go back and watch that Clemson game. Florida State gashed them, particularly in the second half when Clemson's defensive front was getting worn down by Florida State's offensive line. Can Florida State turn the tables and wear Alabama down in this game? That's something I'm going to be watching for, and that would be shocking, I think, to most watchers, to watch Alabama get worn down. And particularly not worn down by, number of plays by a spread offense, but worn down Alabama style, essentially. So that's another interesting question. Now, let's go ahead and start to wrap this. Let's get into what I actually expect to happen in this game. And again, styles make fights. Whenever I boil this game down, I just keep coming back to the quarterbacks, wide receivers, tight ends, and secondaries. And I ask, which team do I think is more likely to be able to beat the other group that's going to be dealing with that particular thing? Will Alabama's wide receivers and Jalen Hurts match up better with the Florida State secondary? And of course, you have to keep in mind, pass rush and all that other stuff. But will they be able to make the plays in the secondary against Florida State secondary at a higher level than what can be expected from Florida State's wide receivers and Francois against Alabama's secondary? And quite frankly, what I keep coming back to is I think Florida State matches up better at all three spots. If I'm choosing a guy to be a play-action downfield passer, to throw some vertical stuff, to throw some stuff in the intermediate areas, to create some of that balance when you're not running the ball quite as well, I'm taking DeAndre Francois over Jalen Hurts. Hurts is a better runner, yes. But if I'm talking about just straight arm and who's going to beat my secondary, I'd rather play against Hurts than against Francois. And then when it comes down to wide receivers versus wide receivers, at this point in the year, I'm going to take Florida State's group over Alabama's group. Calvin Ridley's probably the best receiver overall. But if I'm Florida State, I can go 6'5", 6'3", with two guys that I know I can count on in terms of Tate and Gavin. And then I got Nooney, who I can stick in the slot, or I can move around. I can move those guys around and get the matchup that I want. And those guys have Francois throwing to them. So, if it comes down to being pretty close to even, I'm taking the bigger guys with the better quarterback. And then, if I'm choosing between the secondaries, I think the Florida State secondary is a little bit better than the Alabama secondary. They're both really good. But, if you watch the Alabama spring game, they've got some potential holes there. Is Diggs going to be reliable at that left corner? There's still some concerns about him coming out of fall. Yeah, he's supposedly improved after making that move from wide receiver in the spring. But, if I'm Jimbo Fisher, I test him early and often. I want to put Nooney Murray out over top of him and see if I can run right by him like I did with Michigan. Is Alabama going to have to support him particularly over the top, which means that then maybe you can go one-on-one with the 6'5" or a 6'3" guy against Averett on the other side. And Averett's a really good player, but if it comes down to one-on-one for a vertical route, a 50-50 ball, I'm taking Auden Tate on him. I'm taking Keith Gavin on him. They make weight classes for a reason. They got size differences for a reason there. So I think Florida State matches up better at all three of the really, really key spots in this game. Because I think the lines of scrimmage largely wash each other out in this game. Both defensive lines are going to eat. Florida State's defensive line is less likely to wear down. So if there's an edge, it might go there. Both sets of running backs are threats to make some big plays. And yeah, Hurts adds a factor, an X factor that Francois does less so with his legs. But I keep coming back to Florida State has added some terrifying playmakers outside. And Alabama's weaker outside and in the secondary than they've been in a while. And I just think Jimbo Fisher is going to be able to create some advantageous matchups in this game. And I think that winds up being most likely the difference in this game. And I can't figure out for the life of me, aside from, you know, Alabama being a public favorite, you know, public team, why Alabama's favored by 7 in this game. I don't think it's right. And again, I think Florida State should be favored in this game. I'm obviously going to pick them. Now, the question is then, by how much? And one way to think about this, you know, if you watch poker, hold'em poker, you know, one of the things, you know, good poker players talk about, you're not talking about, you know, how many chips you're down or whatever, you know, it's not just dollar figures that you're talking. What you're talking about is how many blinds are you down? And you start counting blinds. Well, he's 20 blinds down, so, you know, he's got to start really playing. He's 20 blinds away from being out. You know, so he's coming to the end. He'd better get a couple hands here and get aggressive. For football, I think you can do the same kind of thing, and basically you can handicap games by saying how many turnovers, or you know, game changing special teams plays does a team need to have in order to win the game. That's your big blinds, right? That's how many blinds you're down. And when I look at this, and again, I did this for the Clemson-Alabama game last year, where I said Alabama would need to be +2 or better to win that game. To be competitive in that game, I thought they'd need to be +2 to basically be at break even. And Alabama went +2 and lost on the last play. In this game, I think Florida State is about minus 1.5 big blinds, if you want to call it that. Minus 1.5 blinds. So essentially, they're a turnover and a half, or a turnover and a special teams play away. Alabama's going to need to be +1, or +1 plus a big special teams play, or +2 to win this game, I think. This is the best defense that Alabama will have played in years. Bama struggled when they faced Washington last year. But Washington wore down. They didn't have a lot of depth up front. They had some dogs, but once those starters were tired, they didn't have other people that could come in. They struggled against LSU, who had depth, but LSU didn't have an offense. And they had some issues. They had a bunch of three and outs against Clemson that cost them. And those are the three best defenses Alabama played last year. This is a better group than any of those defenses. And it has a lot of the strengths of all of those defenses with more depth. They're deeper up front than LSU or Washington were. They've got the quality that Washington did with that much more depth. It's like two Washington defensive lines. So I think Alabama is going to need to be at least +1 in turnover margin to be at break even in this game. If Florida State's even or wins the turnover margin, Florida State wins this game. And as I project it, absent, you know, some really weird bounces of the ball and all this, I think Florida State's going to win some early one-on-ones downfield. Fisher's going to manufacture some advantageous matchups, and Florida State's going to go out to a little bit of an early lead. And I think what's really going to shock people is I think ultimately late in the game, Florida State's going to start pulling away. Florida State's going to wear down Alabama late in this game, and they'll win. I think, all things being equal, if you know, figuring on about an even turnover battle, I think Florida State wins 34-23. That's what I've got in. Alabama, Florida State 34, Alabama 23. So that'll do it for us today here on the Unconquered Podcast. Once again, I want to thank our sponsor, Realtor Louis Marquez from Jacksonville, Florida. definitely give him a ring, give him a call, drop him an email, drop him a line on social media if you're thinking about listing your house or looking for a house in the greater Jacksonville area. This has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Thanks for listening. I made this.